Welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Robert. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Had a decent day. So we missed the last 2 weeks, and the simple answer is both weeks. I just because usually the way I gather news is I see stuff online, I take screenshots. I read from those screenshots, give my opinion or whatever, or if there's any, videos for us to watch, so any presentations or trailers, I will watch those, note those down, and we just kind of go from there. I realized just for both weeks, apart from some really small stuff, I just had no notes, which has happened like a handful, maybe a handful of times where I've gone to make notes for the podcast and there'll be gaming news, but none of it have really been sort of like either for games I'm interested in talking about or things I'm interested in talking about or games that I am in the circles of, if that makes sense. But we're back this week. We've got a lot of release dates to talk about, some of which are more hot off the presses than others. I've got some stuff to say about games I've been playing, and I'm sure you do. So let's transition to you first. What have you been playing?
Well, broke down and got Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Nice.
Right off the bat, automatically my top candidate for Game of the Year. This is going to sound really, really weird, but the easiest way to describe it is that it is very, very proudly French in the best way possible.
French people can be cool. Yeah.
Yeah,
they're also very
but
good.
I mean, like,
they're also very good at football, by the way. So,
yeah, well, I don't know anything about that, but I mean, like, the art style is very heavily influenced by the early French impressionists, like Monet and Degas, and it comes through very clearly. You know, all the voice actors say their name, each other's names in French, which are very genealogically, historically very French. Like the first three people in your party are Gustave, Lunay, and Mayel. The costume design also very French. They randomly swear in French.
Nice.
And you get to beat up a mime, which is always fun if mimes have ever freaked you the hell out. And I do have a couple articles about that for my part of the news. So I'll just get into that later.
Nice. Yeah, I've heard Expedition 33, you said, right? I've heard nothing but good things. I remember when they showed it. Was it the Xbox Dev Direct when they showed? Yeah, it was that one, right? Where they showed the four games or something. They showed like South of Midnight, Doom, this, and something else, which isn't coming to my mind. The Ninja Gaiden stuff, which was sort of shadow dropped. And I liked it when they first showed it there. My new games to play list is slowly building up a little bit, which I think is a good thing. I think it's better to have too much to play than not know what to play, because then at least you can know what you're going to do next. But I'm still doing my podcast projects and stuff, which I'll mention some Uncharted things in a minute. But yeah, it's got Ben Starr in it as well, from what I understand, and a few other actors that are very recognisable. So that's good to see again as well. But yeah, I'm curious to jump into it. I would just be... I think how I'm going to do this is Lost Legacy, finish that. That's what I'm playing at the moment. I'll talk about that in a second. Then finish Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Then finish... Because before I jump into this year's new games, I want to just clean up some of the games that I had left over from the end of last year. So the Horizon Lego game would be after that. I mean, you know, saying I'll finish 7 Rebirth is not going to be a short thing. So I'll do Lost Legacy, 7 Rebirth. Because I was on chapter 9 of 12, I think. So, you know, I don't know how long is actually left, but there shouldn't be terribly long left. So I'll do that, and then I'm going to finish the Horizon Lego game, which should take a short amount of time than what Final Fantasy should. And then do you remember when towards the end of last year I said, oh, over the Christmas break I'm going to replay the Horizon games, and that just never happened. because of what was the actual reason? Because there's like the show or the film now coming up, and I wanted a refresher on Horizon anyway. So I don't know when I'll do that, because then I need to kind of, because we are heading towards the halfway point of the year already, and I've not, have I played or reviewed a single new game this year yet? I don't think so, because I think I've been spending most of the year doing this podcast project thing, or the other one before, from before as well. Because there's Assassin's Creed Shadows for me to try. I would like to try that game. I don't know if I'll finish it, but I would like to try it. Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, I want to step into that. Expedition 33, definitely want to try that. Am I forgetting any other new games? There's been some other stuff as well, I think. But that even that long list of games I've just mentioned, that's more than enough to jump into for now. Anyway, back to you. What
Well,
so
speaking of Ben Starr, the rest of the cast for the Expedition 33 is also very well stacked, because you got Andy Serkis doing Renoir,
yep.
and then you got Daredevil himself, Charlie Cox,
Nice.
doing Gustav, who is basically your main character for the game. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. I don't count it as a new release, but the Oblivion remaster blew up
What do
when
you
its
mean?
shadow dropped. Oblivion Remaster, or
Oh, you don't count Oblivion New Master as a new release.
yeah,
Oh, I'm
because
sorry.
it's a
I thought you said ex the way you said that, I thought you meant Expedition 33. But no,
oh
Oblivion's not new. So, yeah. Okay.
no, but yeah, Oblivion Remaster like blew up. It was like day one that it shadow dropped, it already hit like 180,000 concurrent on Steam, and I think it peaked at like 215. But yeah, that game went nuts.
It did. It did.
But
People seem to
like,
love it.
it's a 20-year-old game. I'm perfectly fine with a remaster of a 20-year-old game coming out. I just, like I said, since it is a remaster, I wouldn't call it a game of the year contender or a new game.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Anything else you played?
A little bit of here and there, still grinding through, a couple of games that I've had. I've kind of put the zombie game on the back burner because it needs some patches. There's a
Okay.
really weird AI glitches with it. There's some screen tearing with the visuals. So,
Oh, it's nasty. That
yeah.
sounds nasty. So, all right, there we go. On to the stuff I've been playing. I think I mentioned on the last podcast I was on or had started Uncharted 3. Yeah, just to give some quick thoughts on 3, 4, and Lost Legacy, because I do want to save that there's a whole bunch of stuff I want to say about even just the Uncharted games on their own in this thing, because I am fascinated by what seemed to happen. I can only describe Uncharted 3 as like, and I did read up a little bit about the development, because I don't think I realized this the first time I played these games, which was all the way back in 2016. It feels like someone took Uncharted 1 and 2, got really high, and then made Uncharted 3. That's what it feels like happened. Uncharted 3, it's definitely not a bad game, and it's got some very good parts to it. But it's a weird game. There's some odd choices that, they're not bad choices, they're just odd. There's just some odd bits and pieces about that game that just strike very weirdly. But I'll break that down more than I when I get to this. Honestly, this podcast project thing I'm doing, it could be, I don't know how long it's going to be, but if you'd ask me to predict, I'd say between 2 to 3 hours, because I have a lot of things to say about all these games. Plus, I haven't told anybody what it is. You could guess an idea of what I'm doing based on what I've mentioned I've been playing, but there's a different idea to it, which I'm looking forward to getting into the weeds of all that. That's going to be really, really fun. That's why it's called a, passionate podcast project, which is fun to do. Uncharted 4, which was next, is the best one. Quite easily. Quite comfortably the best one. I would describe it as Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 were made so that Uncharted could walk, and then Uncharted 4 is when Uncharted was able to run. Now I'm about halfway, because Lost Legacy is like half the length of the other games. It's got like 9 chapters or something instead of about 15. Also, with just to go back to Uncharted 3 for a second, I got to like chapter 15 and I was like, how many chapters are in this game? And I think they said like 25. And the story felt like it was coming to an end at around chapter 15. And I don't really recall what happened in the plot. Not that Uncharted is really made for the plot necessarily. They're very, very, very heavy set piece games where you're just constantly falling off of buildings that are falling apart. That sort of a summary of Uncharted is Nathan Drake's gonna make an admittedly quite stupid, dangerous jump to hunt some treasure that he has some idea of where it is, but at any moment, any piece of rubble that he's got his hand on could come off that cliff, and if it does, he is definitely dead. And okay, it's the video gamey version of a Hollywood blockbuster film, but Nathan himself, I know there's obviously the other characters, should have died probably some way halfway through Uncharted 1. And it's only because obviously he's the main character and all that sort of thing that he actually survives, because there's so many times that, not that I'm asking for realism from Uncharted, because I knew not to expect that, but if it was more, let's say, grounded and realistic, he'd have died ages ago. He'd have died ages and ages and ages ago. He would have fell off some random cliff in some random country somewhere, and he would have drowned or hit his head on a rock, and nobody would have ever found him. That's what should have happened in Uncharted. But yeah, Uncharted 3 is weird, and I don't think it's necessarily too long, although it's probably the one that's too long out of all five of them so far. Anyway, so with Uncharted 4, so that's where Amy Henning, for reasons that we still don't know, stepped away from the project, and Bruce Stradley and Neil Druckmann, who, which would have been after, sorry, before this game, obviously wrote and directed Last of Us 1, of which Uncharted 4 came out afterwards. And you can see some DNA in there as well. I don't know if this is a controversial opinion. I mean, I've started to try to have the mindset that, okay, when I come on here and say stuff, and if I think something that I'm going to say is stupid or controversial, go on Twitter and read like five different random tweets, and then you'll realize that you're not stupid. If that makes sense. Now I'm not saying it is a good thing that Amy didn't get to do what she wanted to do in Uncharted 4, but I think the idea, the writing of where Neil has come in and he's directed and Bruce has directed, is just a lot better than Uncharted 1 through 3. There's just more of a human touch put towards these characters, and there's like reflective human moments which I really like, and you can certainly see like some writing bits and pieces from Last of Us 1 put into Uncharted 4, which makes sense again time-wise, because Last of Us came out, then Uncharted 4 and Lost Legacy pretty much came out back to back, all while Part 2 of Last of Us was in development. So you can see those things kind of bleeding into each other almost, which sort of makes sense. But I like a lot of the things Amy Henning did with 1, 2, and 3, but, and you could look at that as its own trilogy, because it technically is. But I think if Uncharted 4 had been more similar and had Amy's fingerprints on it, in the same way as Uncharted 1, 2, and 3 did, I don't think Uncharted 4 would have quite made the advancement forward that it needed to. That's what I didn't notice these things when I was first playing these games, because I wasn't podcasting or anything like that. This was back in like, early 2016, 17, when Entertainment Talk was still around, but I was, obviously things were a bit different. But yeah, I'll dig into that aspect more. And I'm not saying, look, like, okay, it was good that Amy didn't do that game or whatever, because I don't know what she would have come up with, and we'll never really know, because obviously that game has come and gone for a long time now. But yeah, I just think it got the push forward that it needed Uncharted 4, and I think it's far and away the best of the Uncharted games so far. Maybe once I finish Lost Legacy, I'll think that that's better than Uncharted 4, but being halfway through Lost Legacy so far, which I'm really enjoying Lost Legacy, but for totally different reasons that I enjoyed Uncharted 4, and they feel like different Uncharted games, and I think that's also a good thing as well. So, because I almost don't feel like it's fair to compare Lost Legacy with the other four, even, because it feels like something. And look, there was a fresh director there as well. There's a different person that directed Lost Legacy, and it feels like a totally different game. The layout, the structure of Lost Legacy is totally different. It still feels like an Uncharted game, very much so. It's still got those core things to it, but it feels like, well, it technically is a spin-off. It feels like a sort of spin-off of Uncharted. So I don't know if that is comparable in the same way. So yeah, but that's what I'm doing so far. I'll have a lot more to say about those games when I get round to doing that. Any thoughts on the Uncharted stuff here?
Well, not on the Uncharted stuff, no, but on the opinions, I always tell people you can't really say this is stupid around me. I've worked the better part of the last 30 years in IT tech. Trust me when I say you're stupid and my stupid. They're not in the same ballpark. They're not the same league. They're not even the same damn sport. When I used to do smartphone support, I'd have to say a good third of my calls were people calling on the phone they were needing help with while driving. And then you get the calls to where
Oh,
you just
right.
have to assume somebody's just trolling you, because somebody called, one call I remember saying they left their iPad on a radiator and it was really, really hot. And they wanted to know if it was okay to use liquid nitrogen to cool it down,
Huh?
because everybody has liquid nitrogen lying around.
What? Okay, fair. Yep, get your point. Yep.
Oh, that's just the stories I can tell. Trust me, the stories I can't tell, you'd have no hope for the planet like I have no hope for the planet. And this was 20 years ago. But yeah, but I mean, obviously with new directors, there's always going to be the stylistic changes, and
Sure.
never is that more clear than the original cut of Justice League. Because it's
Oh my God,
really,
yeah, this
really
is
easy
basically
to
a different
see.
film, yeah.
Well, outside of that, stylistically, art-wise, and conceptually, dialogue-wise, it is really, really easy to see which parts were done by Zach and which parts were done by Joss.
Yeah, quite easy. Yeah. Just to go on record once more, I know I've said this 5 or 6 times, the idea of creating and releasing 2017's Justice League might be the stupidest thing a studio's ever done. Because I still think the damage from that hasn't been undone. I still don't. I know it's been nearly, Christ, 8 years. Yeah, it's been 8 years roughly since that. Because there's two parts to that, one of which is going, okay, fair enough. Joss did Avengers. Could he do Justice League? That's a fair thing to assume, right? Like, okay, you did one superhero team up. Could you maybe do a different one if you change and rejig some things or whatever? But the idea of like not shutting down the production, let alone finishing and releasing that film, is yeah, and look, we've covered loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of stuff on Entertainment Talk's history. We've been doing this 9 years. That's I know we talk a lot about like okay, EA and Ubisoft and Activision and all the Warner Brothers and all these other sort of stuff. That's still like if I was to make a list, and I'm not actually going to do this by the way. If I was to make a list of like okay, since Entertainment Talk started in 2016, the top 10 stupidest slash worst things a studio has done, I know that that would be at number one. Before I even brainstorm the other 9 choices.
That one wouldn't even make my top 10.
Really? What do you mean?
Well, let's take a look. For the Superman and Lois WB show where they had the character John Irons. In the comics, that character's name is Steel. Basically, the Superman robot suit thing. They actually made a movie of that in the 90s, starring basketball call star Shaquille O'Neal. Terrible actor.
Right.
You had the second Looney Tunes Space Jam movie with LeBron James, who had a stunt double for that movie. I am not making that up. There's a photo of him with his stunt double for a cartoon movie where all he has to do is play basketball.
Right.
I mean, those two alone
did I review that
are
film?
Like in my top five.
I think I did. I don't remember disliking that film, but it was clearly just a Warner Brothers advert. The second one specifically. So, anyway. But just with what 2017's Justice League did, it caused the DCEU to have a very, 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 very slow death. And even with the DCEU clearly being dead, because we're doing the DCU now, that still is, like, let's say, echoing through the tunnels of DC. So, anyway, yeah, that's your DC talk stuff. So, anyway, yeah, so that's what I've been playing. I'm going to continue with, yeah, Lost Legacy. I should have it finished by the next podcast, because it's not the biggest game. Although I do have, yeah, might be finished by next week. I don't know, depends what happens in the next week or so. Anyway, other talking points and stuff. Where should I put everything? Because I was going to do the little new segment thing where I talk about something I've seen or watched or something. And I was going to mention the Access Astrobot stream. I could still talk about that in the news. And we also have to say goodbye to Skype as well. But we can, yeah, we can take a break, do some housekeeping and all that. And talk about that on the other side. So let's take a break, do some housekeeping, and we'll be back in a minute. Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, of course the first podcast to mention is one for The Last of Us Season 2. This is my spoiler-free review from yesterday for Season 2, Episode 4. I loved this week's episode, and you can go and listen to me. Is wax lyrical the right phrase? I don't know if that's the right phrase. Talk very positively about it. I don't know if I'm actually saying the right phrase there. So, yeah, talk very highly of that one. That's a spoiler free review. I'll be doing my spoiler predictions after we've done this podcast, so look out for that. And then of course our actual spoiler review for the episode itself will be on Wednesday. Over on other TV stuff, I did a must-see review for Dream Productions Season 1. It's a limited series. It is a spin-off slash kind of sequel to Inside Out 2. It's from the world of Inside Out 2 from Pixar, and that's a Disney Plus show. So I enjoyed that. That was an interesting one to see. Over in the United cast, ignoring our 4-3 loss to, oh my god, who was it, away to Brentford. We did beat Athletic Bilbao away by 3-0. Nobody expected it, and we could have scored a lot more goals. We got the second leg of that game coming up on Thursday. Everybody seems to assume that we're going to be in the final, but that's not how football works. We still have to go and do a job in the second leg, and football is football, and you never know what might happen. Some people have literally said, like, okay, they're going to, like, book a holiday and book their plane tickets and stuff. Don't do that yet, because we're not actually through in the tie yet. So don't go booking anything for a game that you don't know that your team's definitely going to be in. So that reminds me, I remember, I know this is a bit random, about 2 years or so ago, before the season started, the Liverpool manager, before they'd even started their Champions League campaign, was like, "Hey, yeah, book your hotels for the end of May, because that's when we'll be in the Champions League final." And I don't remember how far they got, but they didn't make it quite near the final. And everyone was like, "Yeah, you probably shouldn't have said that." So, anyway, that's over in the Nightcast. Over on the back to The Last of Us, our review for last week's Season 2, Episode 3. That is the spoiler. Review for the episode for Season 2, Episode 3. Then did my spoiler predictions episode. I'm going to be titling those a little bit differently. Not going to talk about it here, but I'll put out. You'll see what I mean when the next one comes out. Don't need to explain that here. That's my spoiler predictions episode. That one's worth still listening to. I know that's from technically last week, but I talked about a lot of stuff on that one and pertaining to like the end of the season and all that sort of thing. So look out for that one. What else have we got over on the United cast? Of course, talked about Liverpool winning their 20th league title, which now means they've got the same amount of league titles as us while we scrabble around in 14th or 15th. So I talked all about that stuff. Over on the United cast as well, I did one called the Rasmus Højlund service problem. He is our striker, and he basically doesn't get given the ball anywhere near as much as he should, and it's really weird. It's really, really, really weird to watch, week to week. And so I talked about that. Over on other TV season reviews, did a strong must-see review for Adolescent Season 1, which, by the way, I'd recommend to basically anybody because I think it's a very, very important series. Particularly as well, if you're in the UK, it does obviously tackle the UK's knife crime problem, especially towards youngsters, because we hear too much about that because it happens all the time, unfortunately, and that tackles obviously all of that. But aside from that, it's a phenomenal show. Like the acting, all the episodes are done in one shot, and it's incredible TV. So we talked about that, and that's what we've been doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into some news. All right, let's get on to some chat bits and pieces, whatever I'm going to call this section. So, yeah, as of yesterday, I set up Teams, which is what Skype is going to be moving to. I know not a lot of people use Skype nowadays. A lot of people use Zoom. People use Discord. You can do like you can do like video and face calls on pretty much anything these days, can't you? You can do it on Messenger and Facebook. I think you can do it on Twitter, although I've not personally looked over there. And obviously, people use these things too, whether it's to make, podcasts remotely or for business calls and things like that. Obviously, Zoom is kind of at the top of the tree right now. But yeah, I wasn't sure if we'd be able to get, because I couldn't remember what the date was. It did say May 5th, I think it says on Skype here, for like, hey, make sure you move all your data over to Teams. I've looked on there. We're gonna test out after we've finished here, just for a minute or so. It reminded me of when, like, when Twitter started more falling apart, and people started using Blue Sky because Blue Sky kind of came along. And I remember seeing menus on Blue Sky and then signing up and using it, and I was like, okay, this is Twitter. Like, it's the buttons are pretty much in the same places. It's called, posts or tweets or whatever. DMs are pretty much in the same place, all that sort of thing. Not only was that the case with that, it was interesting when, because I sent you and David different messages of like, hey, just checking out Teams and whatever. The menus look pretty much the same over there. And then I noticed when I sent you a message, and I didn't know this was going to happen, but I should have assumed, I suppose. I sent you and David different messages, and then the messages were still on the same place in Skype. So it's, yeah, pretty much just transferring from one thing to the other. But not with every single podcast, but for like 99% of the podcasts that we've done. I mean, obviously, when I do solo ones, I don't need Skype because I don't need to call anybody, but we've recorded, maybe literally thousands of, I was gonna say hundreds, because I was thinking of our gaming talk numbers, which is what, 4 or 12 this week. But hundreds, if not thousands, of podcasts we've done over Skype, and I'd have quite easily kept using it. I mean, we're gonna basically be using the same thing. It's just gonna be called Teams instead of Skype. So, but yeah, lots and lots and lots and lots of podcasts for Entertainment Talks History have been done over Skype. The sort of end of the year podcasts we've done, many, many, many Walking Dead episodes, some Last of Us episodes, plenty of Gaming Talk episodes, any sort of paired, season reviews, film reviews. So it's a bit of again, I say a bit of an end of an era. It's going to feel like we're using almost the same thing, just with a different name, for the next podcast. But yeah, any thoughts on, I guess, our history with Skype?
I mean, we've used it a lot, obviously.
Yeah, it's been the
We
main
have
platform.
done we I did do a couple podcasts with David where we used Teams, not Teams, Zoom. And I've never really had an issue with Zoom or Teams. I am getting tired of all the programs that Microsoft wants you to run in the background because Teams will auto launch unless you turn it off. OneDrive will auto launch unless you turn it off. It just slows down the computer like nothing else, and that's assuming you don't have a really terrible, bloated, non-functioning antivirus software like Norton on your computer, which really slows things down. Like seriously, if you have Norton on your computer, get rid of it immediately.
Yeah, I've had that experience. So I have a different program for that. I actually two different things, but anyway. Yeah, but yeah, so it will just, I mean, to say we'll get used to it, I think, is an understatement, because I looked on there and I was like, okay, it's just menus are just the same as Skype, which that makes more sense than Blue Sky being the same as Twitter, because Blue Sky is made by someone completely different, and not based off the same IP or the same company or anything, whereas obviously these are both Microsoft things. So was it just the case that, like, with the more business side of Microsoft, that Teams just took off and they just like, hey, we don't need this Skype thing hanging around? It just seems like that's basically what's happened. So,
Well, Skype's also really, really old. I mean, the software launched in 2003, and I think Microsoft bought them in 2011, 2012, somewhere in that time frame. So it's just one of those things that it's been forever, and not all the software stays around. God knows I have to deal with that with my job because you get people that, like, there's this one software, I won't say what it is. But only one department uses it. They stopped support for it 15 years ago. It is not allowed on Windows 11 computer and future because of its software vulnerability and security vulnerability. And the department still refuses to get rid of it. And trust me, that's one of those things where I just love to take the people in charge and throw them into a cage match and just watch with popcorn. Let them go at it physically. Because they're going at each other politically and, inter-office politic-wise
Mentally,
over it. And that's not nearly as much fun as people smacking each other around.
I guess so, yeah. But yeah, I guess we'll say goodbye to Skype when we actually close it, so or whatever. But yeah, lots of history there. So over on other stuff I just wanted to chat about. So Access has changed the way, PlayStation Access, I mean, has changed the way that they do their streams. They had one of them things, content creator says, hey, we've been doing things same way for a bit, we need to change things up a little bit, which, by the way, I do think of how to do those things. But if a good idea does not come up and a change does not need to be made, then you can't force that sort of thing. So yeah, they basically changed from streaming like twice a week to streaming kind of whenever. And one of the sort of ideas they had for their sort of party games or competitive games is to have one bumper stream for the month, and it did their one for I think it was for end of April or beginning of May. Did an ultimate Astrobot time run, sorry, time challenge test, and they had Ash back, which was really, really nice. Of course, we mentioned must have been last year. I think it was last year, just before like Halloween or something. And obviously, she went off to be independent. She's done all obviously her own YouTube channel and things like that. She used to work for What Culture, for those of you that know that channel and everything. Still clearly very, very good friends with the Access team. She posted when like they all got invited for the Last of Us premiere, because her, Rob, and Ash all went, which was nice and everything. Obviously, they got ties through PlayStation, so that's probably how they ended up getting that. So that was cool. But it's one of the things, like, she came back for that. I guess she's in the spot of like doing guest bits and pieces for the channel, which is nice. Although she did say she was moving, I'm not sure how far away she now lives from the studio, but it can't be, terribly far, as she can sort of occasionally visit. But it just like she just fit that stream like a glove, if you know what I mean. It was like she'd never left, and it just sort of she just fits it sort of perfectly and everything. And that's also down to sort of her friendship with the rest of the crew and her chemistry with them, and just how clearly easily they get along and everything. I did kind of have this little fear in the back of my mind, like, oh, when she leaves Access, is she, because when you hear someone leave a company and then a few months go past and someone's NDA has clearly ended, and they go, right, this was terrible, they treated me, when that sort of thing happens, because it usually happens a lot of times with films, right? Like, you'll get a film that comes out, and then years later, an actor or a director will speak up and they'll say, hey, the studio treated us terribly and they did this and they did that, because they're actually allowed to do it now. But none of that has happened yet, which is really, really nice. So that was good to see. I'm not gonna say who won on the stream or anything, because it's a long stream and I obviously don't want to spoil it for people that haven't seen it. But yeah, it was a ton of fun. It was an absolute ton of fun to watch. So I quite enjoyed that. I do genuinely prefer their sort of challenge streams and when they get competitive with each other, but friendly competitive, because it can be a little bit obvious sometimes when it's like, okay, we're sort of streaming this game because PlayStation's told us to. In a way, but even when those streams happen, they still make them fun, which I think is probably a difficult thing to do, so I give them credit for that. So yeah, there was the other stream that they did as well, where they did the Days Gone remaster came out and it had the sort of horde mode. I was looking at the sort of, because I think I said this when they announced it at the time, I was looking at like the way that Days Gone is played, and obviously I played it before anyway, but it's been a while, and looked at this sort of horde mode, and just from looking at everything of what Days Gone is and what this horde mode is, I was like, this is just a bad Last of Us, because like the horde mode's just not kind of, because with No Return, with the Last of Us, you get kind of the it's almost done in like chapters, and then you have a boss that you defeat, then you beat that boss, and then you keep unlocking stuff. It just seemed like it's just okay, you fight off a horde until you die, and there isn't much past that. It also just I don't know, I liked Days Gone when it came out and I thought it was a good game and all that, but if you're Sony slash PlayStation and you're looking at The Last of Us and you're looking at Days Gone, you really don't need Days Gone as an IP. And I remember there was a narrative around the game of like, do they need this sort of second, zombie slash infected slash apocalyptic series? I don't think that they do. So yeah, like for me, if I never, because I don't plan on getting that remaster, and if I never get any like TV adaptation of Days Gone or a sequel, I don't honestly know if I'll sort of notice, I think. So anyway, just wanted to talk about that. Let's move on to we haven't actually done the news segment yet, have we? Yeah, let's do that and we'll get into some news. All right. So the world was up in arms this week as a big piece of news came out, which is that Grand Theft Auto 6 has been delayed to May 26th, 2026. Now, how I initially consumed this news is because I saw this first thing in the morning when I woke up. Now, when you wake up first thing in the morning, and obviously you kind of naturally check your phone, because if you use your phone for your alarm and you turn it off and then you see notifications and you just start checking through stuff, I thought this had said, now this is just my not sleep deprived state, but you're sort of, hey, you've literally just woken up and your body's like, waking up sort of thing. I first thought this said 26th of May 2025, and I was like, it's coming out next month, that's crazy. And then I gave it another look, and it said 2026 and not 2025. So yeah, that was an interesting experience. We do have a actual press release thing here from Rocksteady, so I guess I should read that out. Grand Theft Auto 6 is now coming on May 26, 2026. We are very sorry that this is later than you expected. The interest and excitement surrounding the new Grand Theft Auto has been truly humbling for our entire team. We want to thank you for your support and your patience as we work to finish the game. With every game we have released, the goal has always been to try and exceed your expectations, and Grand Theft Auto 6 is no exception. We hope you understand that we need this time, extra time to develop, sorry, to deliver at the level of quality you expect and deserve. We look forward to sharing more information with you soon. I mean, I think the world, if Grand Theft Auto 6, forget GTA 5 for a moment, because GTA 6 has been anticipated for 12 years. It'll be 13 years by the time it now comes out. If Grand Theft Auto 6 came out, and let's say it just wasn't in a good state, right? Forget about the actual like characters, plot, mechanics. I'm talking about the, the technical state of the game. I don't like to think of, let's say a world where GTA 6 comes out and it's just recognizably a badly put together game, or it's just not as well put together as what it should be. I mean, I dread to be somebody working on this game as well, because you know that before, during, and after release, this game is going to have millions, if not billions, of eyes on it, because it's Grand Theft Auto 6, and it's been, it's the next highly anticipated game and everything. I couldn't imagine sitting there trying to like code this game, or even just do something like design a car in this game or design a character's outfit, because they would just, this game's gonna have so much, especially the internet day and age that we live in, where everything gets scrutinized to a T. In an unhealthy way. I mean, being, critiquing and being critical of something that you love, I mean, that's kind of what we do here, but there's a level of like new nitpicking in the world where people will kind of moan about the silly or the unnecessary things, or that kind of thing. Or they'll take like a very, very small mistake or a small thing, and they'll blow it kind of wildly out of proportion. And maybe I've done that without realizing. Maybe. I mean, I've said a lot of words over the years. So yeah, it needs more time. It's a shame, I think. I mean, because a lot of people were kind of thinking, okay, we'll get this in what, November 2025, and we'll see like another trailer or some gameplay between now and the summer, let's say. So yeah. Anyway, I don't know how specifically excited you are for this game, Robert, but what do you think of GTA 6 being delayed pretty much a year?
It being delayed only is an annoyance to me because so many games have scheduled their release date avoiding GTA 6 because let's face it, when that game launches, you either want to be out already for a couple of weeks or not out for a month. There's not really a whole lot of in between on that. And that just screws up at least a dozen games that I can think of. With their schedule, unless they're ones that were like either so confident that they didn't care or anything like that. Because you gotta remember, wasn't that supposed to come out like next month, like in June or something?
What?
The GTA 6.
Probably,
'Cause they were saying like,
it was probably going to be fall of this year, I would imagine.
yeah.
Or sometime between
But
like September, November. Yeah.
the big one that's up next is Dune: The Dark Ages, which comes out this month in May. And so now it's got free pass to be the best-selling game for God knows how long, because there ain't really nothing on the horizon that's even going to compete with it on any level.
Well, we do have some release dates to talk about in just a moment, but we'll save that for now. Yeah, we do have a. I should probably jump to this while we're on the subject. Where did it go? Abed wrote in and said, "With GTA 6 out of the way for the year, I've got two questions. What is your most anticipated game for 2025, and what do devs do? I think who are looking at fall 2025 do now, and that kind of feeds into what you were talking about. I mean, if you were a dev and you think, okay, we were aiming for the end of the year, but we were going to push it to March, February-ish, whatever your game was going to be. I mean, March, February would be fine because that would still be out of the way of GTA 6. But I don't know, because these things take a long, long time to plan. So I get what you mean in terms of. They say the next 6, 7 months of games that need to be nearly finished for the fall season, as you guys call it over there. Do those devs try and quicken up their schedules a bit so they can aim for that October, November? Because that slot is now, apart from, FIFA and COD, which will obviously come out around that time. Yeah, I suppose other devs can aim for it now, but if you were sort of trying to stretch your development out a bit and go, let's say 2 months after GTA 6, while you do now have the opportunity to go before it, is your game going to be ready in, 6, 7 months or so? So I wonder what that will kind of do now to that. So, I mean, we don't know what those, apart from, because I've got Ghost of Yota here for October 2nd or 2nd of October, and I'll talk about these release dates in a second. Because we haven't had that sort of, in the summer when we actually start getting some fall dates for games, that hasn't quite sort of happened yet because we're still kind of dealing with, what are we in, Q2 of the year, I think. So we're not quite at that point in the year, and we've just had a bunch of stuff come out. So I don't know. I don't know what this will do to games that sort of could have come out in the fall but didn't know that until now, I suppose. It is a bummer to have to wait another year for GTA 6. I mean, we've all been waiting 12 years for this game anyway. Obviously, this clearly isn't going to affect Rockstar or Take-Two because they've got, quite frankly, unlimited money to do whatever they want. But, because rather than being more concerned about when this game comes out, I'm more curious as to, okay, the more immediate thing, which is when do we see more of it? Like, when do we see, and is the next thing we see going to be a trailer? Is it going to be actual gameplay stuff? Could obviously do both in the same video. And is that going to be in the summer or something? I don't know. So, what do you think we might actually see next from GTA 6, and roughly when do you think that might be?
Maybe a gameplay or character trailer towards the end of the year to get the hype back up.
Yeah, I suppose so. See, the thing is, we're trying to predict that for GTA because it's such an irregular franchise. Like, there's certain IP and franchise that have, like, okay, once we get to this bit, we know this, we know that. Or like certain anniversary dates or things like that as well, and you can kind of predict that a bit more. But because Rockstar is able to be so sort of because they can operate in such a way of, let's say on Friday, right, they go, hey, 9 a.m. Pacific time Saturday tomorrow, new trailer. Everybody's eyes are immediately taken off of what they're playing and what they're paying attention to this, that they can just grab people's attention like that, and they can just they don't have to sort of say like, oh, we'll see you in a month. It could literally be like, hey, new thing tomorrow, we know you're all gonna come over to us, and they can just do what they want, rather than a kind of, when like Xbox and PlayStation used to say like, "Hey, our E3 date is this," and then we'd all predict of like, "Hey, what games are we going to see?" And there'll be big like, prep for it. Rockstar can just sort of say, "Hey, we'll see you tomorrow," or whatever. That reminds me a little bit. You remember when Cyberpunk was in development, and they tweeted out beep. And it was like, oh my! Everyone was like, "Oh my God, was it mean? Does that mean something for tomorrow?" Like, and everybody kind of lost their minds. And it was a fun thing to do. Rockstar could, I mean, Rockstar could tweet out like an emoji of a car, and that's it, and then not say anything else. And there'll be people in the comments being like, "Oh, this means this and this," and that can be fun, right? But like, yeah, they can easily control the, games media in all the games news flow in that way, which is fun. All right, some other release dates I wanted to mention. Your most anticipated game, Ghost of Yote, has got a release date of 2nd of October 2025. Death Stranding, which I think we already knew the release date of, I was just gathering some release dates together, is June 26th, sorry, 26th of June 2025, which is actually next month. And then we have a Gears of War one, which we'll get to in a minute. I've been thinking kind of since you mentioned it about what you said about Ghost of Yote, which there was nothing wrong with what you said. And I was kind of thinking of, because, well, say you, we all found out that, okay, one of the writers from, was it Dragon Age? Veilguard, right? Not Inquisition, I'm thinking of the wrong one. One of the writers from that game was going to be one of the writers on this game, and because you didn't like what you saw from Dragon Age, which is a fine opinion, you don't have to like someone's writing, that kind of put your hopes down for Ghost of Yote. Do you still kind of feel that same way about the game, or yeah, what were you feeling
Yeah,
with
and
that?
like I said in other podcasts, it's not just the writing. If you look at the lead voice actor and some of the shit she said,
Oh yeah, I forgot about
you
her.
don't hire those people in a vacuum. You don't hire somebody like that, as opinionated as she is, with those attitudes that she has, not knowing that, and you don't hire her not liking that. So that gave me a wooga, that's going to be a bad thing, with that character design and that character attitude, and that's just going to bleed through the game. And yeah, I have no interest in it. It was supposed to be a direct sequel like 10 years later from the original game, the Ghost of Tsushima, which I would have been down for. I don't know how much I would have had a chance to play it because with Sony doing their whole "you must sign in" nonsense,
Oh yeah, that as
I
well.
don't know that I would even play the game anymore.
Right, and you don't
And
have
that
a
has nothing to do
PS5,
with the
so.
game itself. Yeah, it has nothing to do with the game itself. That has strictly to do with Sony's policies. And don't get me wrong, this ain't a pure Sony hate. Microsoft did a bunch of stupid shit the other day, which I've got in my news group. So it just seems like it's a race to the bottom of who wants to be the worst company. And
Guess
I
so.
just it's exhausting me.
Yeah. The one kind of isolated question I was going to ask you is, okay, it's fine if you, let's say, witness the writing of the Dragon Age game. Would you kind of, because you're going from something like Dragon Age to the Ghost of the Ghost franchise, whatever we're going to end up calling this thing, right? Do you think that gives that, so if we focus on the writer, not the voice actress or voice performer or whatever phrase we use these days, does that give you like different hope, specifically for the writing thing? Because I'm asking of like, okay, you didn't like what that person did in one area, but this is different IP, different characters. So what do you kind of think of that area, if you get what I'm trying to ask you?
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, when it comes to writing, it might be a different genre game, a different style of game, but it's still the same core. The easiest way to describe that is, think of food. Eggs are eggs, bread is bread, cheese is cheese. But you can take the same ingredients and have two completely different chefs cook two completely different meals with the same set of ingredients. And hell, there's a lot of competitive cooking shows out there where it's exactly that, where they have, you have this, 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 and this ingredients, and then those chefs just go, and you get wildly different interpretations of food, and that's all on the chef's background. You know, where do they train? What food do they grow up with? What food influenced them the most? What style they like the most? Same, you know, 5-10 ingredients, and you get things completely different. And then on the same vein, you know, you can get 10-20 different ingredients, and that same chef will cook very similar in terms of like flavor profile, spice profile, things like that.
Yeah.
You give them a bunch of random different ingredients, and you can, they'll cook it, and then you could say, yeah, this fits with how you grew up cooking. And so that, to me, it's just going to be the same thing. It's like, yeah, it's not a fantasy. It's more reality-ish, air quotes, based. Characters that actually kind of sort of existed, but it's the same writer. So it's going to be the same lens through the same world, force-feeding us the same ideology. And, you know, I just don't have any hope for it being a well-written game. It might be mechanically great. Mm-hmm. The gameplay might be very good. But if the writing sucks, the character sucks, you're going to see that. And that's what we saw with the Veil Guard. I mean, mechanically, it was fine if a little sparkle, lens flare, backlit bloom, you know, oversaturation nonsense. The mechanics worked fine. The gameplay worked fine. But the writing was so dog shit awful that nobody wanted to play it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's fair enough. Just thought I'd ask about that. And then, yes, we have another release date, which is Gears of War Reloaded, which I'm going to assume contains Gears of War 1 through 5. And, oh God, what was the prequel called? The one with Braid. I can't remember the actual name of it. I haven't played it for years. It says, rev up your lancers. This is from PlayStation. Gears of War Reloaded comes to PS5 on August 26th, remastered from the ground up. I'm a big Gears of War fan. I like Gears of War quite a lot. And I hope that the Netflix animated film or whatever they were going to do has been cancelled. I did kind of think, because when I was in this, you know, this revisiting stage I've been doing, you know, replaying the Crash games, replaying the Jak and Daxter games, or playing some of them for the first time, replaying the Uncharted games. There was two other franchises that popped up in my mind, which was Mirror's Edge, because I've been listening to some music from those games, and also Gears of War. And this might be a good opportunity to do that, if I do have a bit of a hankering to kind of replay those games, because I do really, really like them. They're my favourite. That's my favourite Xbox franchise. And that is going to be very, very good. So, from the ground up, so I remember when this first came out as a rumour, which was, what, like a year ago or something? Ever since that whole thing about Xbox going, not third party, but releasing more games on PlayStation, and people were kind of talking about, like, hey, if you've got Marcus's gun with the chainsaw, what's the haptic feedback going to be like on that? And that could be very, very cool. So I'm assuming, yeah, if you do a game just for PS5, from the ground up, remake, that you probably should include some haptic feedback in there, obviously for the shooting, for the reloading, climbing, running, whatever. Probably some big graphical updates, I assume taking some advantage of the PS5 Pro's stuff, whatever that's going to be. But the thing I'm most curious about, yeah, is what that is, what the haptic feedback kind of feels like, which would be quite cool to see. So I'm in a vacuum looking forward to that. There's obviously a bigger discussion about, like, I mean, I've talked about this so many times, I don't know how many of my points I want to reiterate about, like, competition and what Xbox is doing. Because there's the two sides to this, which is, okay, cool, your games are going to sell more because you're going to put them on a platform that hasn't had them before. But again, just for IP competition, that doesn't strike me as a good. I mean, they've probably done their numbers and things like that, right? But just in my eyes and in my opinion, you're not really supposed to give your competitors your games and your shows and your films. Like if let's say Netflix went, hey, we're going to give HBO some rights to Stranger Things or all the seasons. Sure, it'd be great that people who haven't subscribed to Netflix or haven't seen the show and are more of a HBO person, sure, they'll get the opportunity to see your show and you'll get some numbers for that, but you're then giving your show to the competitor and not having them come to your platform. Which those sort of things you don't really see very often. It is more done more in gaming than anywhere else. Obviously, films is a much more free-flowing kind of platform anyway, because you don't really buy or watch films from other sort of platforms unless they're sort of no, different cases. But I mean, now that you've done Forza, which is on the PlayStation Store, which by the way, because I watch the weekly access videos on like, hey, what's coming to PlayStation? Because I can't remember every release date for everything, and it's also good to see what's coming to PlayStation. It was weird to see Rob presenting like, oh yeah, Forza's coming to PlayStation, and just being very casual and normal about it. I never quite thought I'd see that in like a in an access video. And they'll be doing the same thing when this game comes around. In the week where this game comes out, it'll be, hey, here's what's happening this week on PlayStation. Gears of War comes to PlayStation. I know Colin Moriarty on Sacred Symbols has like called this out a long, long time ago. Said like, yeah, Gears, Halo, Forza, they're all going to pretty much end up on PlayStation. And while I thought that was a possibility, because for like all their other franchises, and I know like Grounded, what was it Grounded, Sea of Thieves, Pentiment, or whatever it's called, and there was a few other ones, but Gears, Forza, Halo, that's just your Trinity. I don't know. Like, let's say you took Horizon, God of War, Last of Us, and Sony suddenly went like, hey, yeah, all of our newest versions of those games, whatever they are, right? So the two newer God of War games, we'll put them on Xbox and see how normal that feels to do. I don't know. It's an interesting time. It's an interesting time. But I suppose it begs the other question of like, okay, between now and the end of the year, are we gonna get, well, Halo on PlayStation or Halo announced for PlayStation? Because I kept saying for a while, and I'll still stick to this opinion, I think the day that you see Master Chief on the PlayStation Store, and not for the Halo show, and I mean, of course, the Halo games, I think that's the day that Xbox has lost, quote unquote, in terms of competition. Yeah, because you could equivalent that the same way of like, okay, let's say you went on the Xbox Store, the games Xbox Store, and you saw Joel and Ellie on there. It would just be an interesting time, I suppose. Anyway, what do you think of yeah, Gears of War is now officially coming to PlayStation?
Well, I have the official article here from the Xbox website, so I do want to fill in some of the details. There's some things and some lessons that Microsoft has very clearly learned very, very well, because when Oblivion Remastered launched, it was $50. When Expedition 33 launched, it was $50. This Reloaded launches August 26 for $40. If you've already purchased the Gears of War Ultimate Edition, you can upgrade to the Reloaded version for free, and it is a Game
Nice.
Pass game. So if you're a Game Pass member, you just get it regardless. They listed the technical upgrades, 4K resolution, 60 frames in campaign, 120 frames in multiplayer, all the shiny, shiny bells and whistles. It doesn't specifically say which game it is, but if it's in the Ultimate Edition, it's in this one.
I assume it would be all of them, right? all six currently of them. The prequel, then 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Definitely 1, 2, and 3 in the prequel. I don't know about 4 or 5. But yeah, and in terms of, Microsoft being on the PlayStation Store, the one thing you can't argue with is the results. When they moved Sea of Thieves over there, it sold 1 million copies within like 2 days. There was a point earlier in this year where the top three game sales on the PlayStation Store were Microsoft games. It was Forza, The Great Circle, and I forget what else. Expedition 33 is the highest rated game on the PlayStation Store that has at least 1,000 reviews, sitting at a 4.91. And on Steam, it's sitting at a 92%. So, I mean, in terms of results, it's very clearly a good decision in terms of these games are selling like mad. It's not like we put it on there, it completely flopped, nobody wanted it. And as for Microsoft, they've always been about the best experience. And with more and more of entertainment, not just video games, although video games was the early precursor to it, but with entertainment going digital and streaming and the physical box becoming less and less of a necessity. And we talked about that before, to where how you're not going to get somebody to go to a different platform, PlayStation to Xbox, Xbox to PlayStation, and lose all that back content. They've decided everything's digital anyway. We're not exclusive to the console because we put it on PC anyway. We're going to get paid when they sell it, so we might as well just put it on there. Right or wrong, you can debate that till you're blue in the face. The fact is that they've done it. It's proven successful in the sense of, if you look at the sales numbers and the charts, it's games that people wanted to play. It's opening up a revenue stream that was previously closed off. And I've slowly been fading away from the concept of a console war because it's just become more and more relevant with the digital streaming. And you're barely old enough to have, sorry, to have this as a concept. But when was the last time you went out and bought a physical music CD?
A
You probably did
while,
that,
but that
in your teens. But yeah, I also can't remember the last time I bought a CD for music. Everything streamed, or you watch individual
I do buy songs on my
on
phone
YouTube.
now.
Yeah, you buy songs on your phone, but even then you're buying you can buy an individual song. You don't have to buy the whole album. Or you could just stream it on Spotify or whatever other streaming platforms there are. And then everybody's doing the digital sales. Amazon's constantly sending me emails about their Prime Music, which is a, I think, a $3 a month upgrade if I want Prime Music. YouTube has a music service, Apple has a music service, Google has a music service. It's just one of those things that the physical nature of entertainment, in terms of, here is my box, here's my media to put in the box to play the game. It's not a dead concept, but it's a sunsetting concept. No different than the VHS tape or the vinyl record. Just new technology, things move, and Microsoft is clearly just trying to get ahead of the game on that.
I mean, I wonder if this whole IP competition thing I'm talking about, it doesn't feel like Microsoft cares specifically about that anymore. It feels like they just sort of, okay, for people that want a box, we do have one of those. If you want to come to us to get your box and have an in-house kind of, Microsoft account and have a console on it and be that all in one sort of have that as your go-to thing. Plus then you obviously get all your third-party games and whatever else, and you can feed that with the Game Pass subscription. But then also, like, we don't mind giving our games to the other team, because they'll sell. Because the way I kind of look at this is like, okay, let's say Uncharted 5 comes out and it's really good and it does whatever it does, and then Microsoft will then look at that and go, right, we don't need to make the same game but better, but what can we do that's, we'll take the eyes off of that and get the eyes to our platform, and then they make a game. And if that game's as good or better, Sony then looks back at them and goes, right, they're doing that, we should do something, as good or whatever. But it seems like that idea is something that Microsoft doesn't really kind of care about. But then at the end of the day, that's become a more wide thing where it's sort of, rather than Xbox and PlayStation doing that with each other, because even if you look at, let's say, and we have a question about this sort of thing later, but if you look at the, let's say, the live service space, which has gotten completely out of control in the last couple of years, it's like, okay, PUBG came out, Fortnite came out, Battle Royale blew up, everybody did their own Battle Royale, and then it collapsed on itself because there's too many of them, and then the few remaining, so, PUBG and Fortnite survived, and then it's sort of the hero shooter came along, everybody decided to do that, and then that fell in on itself. So it's not just like, oh, PlayStation makes a sci-fi game, therefore Xbox should make a sci-fi game. Then PlayStation puts out a Western shooter, or I'm just thinking of random stuff, and then we have to do that. It doesn't work in the same way like that anymore. It's more kind of just, because this works for TV and it works for films as well, where one company will do something really successfully, everybody else looks at them and go, right, what can we do that's similar that will gain the same success? But yeah, it doesn't seem like, I mean, yeah, if they're going, right, you can have Grounded, Gears of War, you can have Halo, you can have Forza, you can have, I mean, there's other than when Halo, let's say, gets announced for PlayStation, there's no more big gems left on the table for Microsoft, for Xbox. Because if you're going to give them Halo, Gears, and Forza, it means that everything is on the table, which I do find a bit weird, because, and I mean, things might have changed since then, but I remember when they did the first four games, and then Phil Spencer got asked about, like, hey, is Starfield gonna come? Is Indiana Jones gonna come to PlayStation? And he kind of said no at the time. Indiana Jones is on PlayStation, and well, Starfield is just it just feels like a matter of time. So it's not a problem. It's just that this it's just an interesting discussion point on. And look, Microsoft has been leaning into this for a while, this idea of, okay, if you want to play our games, you don't necessarily need our console, but I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing anymore necessarily. So we'll see what happens if slash when Halo gets announced for PlayStation. So yeah. All right, let's move on from that. You have some stuff to talk about as well. So yeah, over to you. What news do you want to talk about this week?
Okay, well, it's a day that ends in a Y, so that means that Ubisoft is in
Yep.
trouble again.
I am shocked.
It's a new one this time, though, from the European privacy group, None of Your Business, and yes, that is an actual name of the privacy group. They have filed a legal complaint against Ubisoft. For harvesting player data in violation of the general data protection regulations in the EU. At the heart of this was a Far Cry player who asked Ubisoft what data they were collecting, and after some computer analysis, the Far Cry Primal game made 150 server connections in 10 minutes. For a single player offline game. None of Your Business calls this secret data collection, and they are currently filing a lawsuit against Ubisoft. If found guilty, Ubisoft could face fines upwards of 92 million euros, which they don't have the money to spare on that. And so they're claiming it's part of the anti-piracy, and then turning around and saying, oh, it's part of the EULA. Well, you can hide so much stuff in the EULA, it's not even funny. But it's one of those things that it's, death by a thousand cuts, and this is just the next cut.
Yeah. I mean, if they get sued or whatever for that, they can just sell the Rayman IP to somebody who'll actually do something with it, and then they'll be fine. Or the Splinter Cell, or any of the other IP that they just don't do anything with. Yeah, it's a common kind of thing that comes up, the whole, data protection discussion, particularly with kind of young people, and but both with the younger people and with older people, because both generations of those people don't always know what sort of things they're clicking on and all that kind of stuff. Not to say it's their fault. This is not anybody's fault necessarily. But yeah, we'll see what comes up with this necessarily. Because I mean, yeah, you did say there about making a comment on Ubisoft's financials, and we do keep hearing about how they're in a bit of a pickle with that. And again, my response to that was, okay, if you need money, you need to do better as a company. You've got plenty of IP that people care about, but you're not doing enough with it. I was thinking actually in between this podcast and last podcast, which obviously was 2 weeks, about what I said with Ubisoft's IP and stuff. And how sort of the days of when we used to talk about Konami like this, in a way of you have a bunch of IP, you're not doing enough with it. And I was kind of reflecting on the comment I made on Konami has woken up before Ubisoft did. And I yeah, the more I've thought about that, not that I've thought about it like every day or something, the more I think about that, the more I think that that's true. And that is, I don't know if that should be a surprise, but I think that's more a surprise on Konami's side than it is on Ubisoft's. Because then you also kind of have to ask the question of, if Konami has woken up before Ubisoft has, how long was Ubisoft actually asleep for? Or quote-unquote asleep for? Or just unaware for? Because Konami, it was a long, long time. I don't know. Yeah, they need to, I think the phrase is, I believe the phrase is wake up and smell the coffee before it's too late. Or is it already too late? I don't know. Depends on what you think. Anyway, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, in terms of the trial and the lawsuit itself, you're not going to see anything for a while because they literally
Oh yeah.
just
Yeah.
filed it a week and a half ago. And this is the kind of thing that'll stick in court for a couple, 3 years. The EULA, I'm not buying because if you bought the game on Steam, it verifies that it's not a pirated game on Steam. If you had bought the game through Xbox or PlayStation, both of those would have verified it at launch, and that's the one check you need. So making 150 server checks in the span of 10 minutes, I mean, it doesn't confirm data collection, but it strongly implies data collection.
Yeah, certainly. All right, what else do you want to talk about this week?
Microsoft is seriously frustrating me because it's always 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. They went forward with Oblivion, and they're going forward with the Gears, and then they're going backwards with their hardware sales. I sent you the link. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it.
I don't think I did,
But
no.
they announced massive price increases for pretty much all their hardware. So the Series S 512 is going up $80. The Series S 1 TB is going up $90. The Series X Digital is going up $100. The Series X is going up $100. And the Series X 2 TB Galaxy Special is going up $130. Controllers, depending on which they are, they're going up, although not as drastically. The Series 2, the Elite 2 Core and Elite 2 Full are both going up $10 and $20 respectively. But it's not even so much the timing, it's just as a concept, because they're third by a mile in terms of hardware sales. You got the Switch 2 coming out, which even with all the bullshit and all the prices, is still gonna sell out, because Switch people and iPhone people and Google people all have the same thing in common. They're all sheeps when it comes to their brand
Yeah,
names.
they just gobble up the next thing. Yeah.
Yep. What's that? The one guy clips like, "Don't ask questions, just consume new product and then get excited for next product."
I've seen that something floating around. Yeah.
Yeah,
Just
and so that's basically it.
buy it and
Because, you know.
don't question it. Yeah, there are people that like every year they spend $1,000 on a new iPhone every single year, and that doesn't make any sense to me. That's just kind of one example, so.
Yeah, and they're blaming everything. First, it was inflation, but that's been going on for 5 years. And then it's the tariffs, but those aren't even implemented yet. Those are just spitballing negotiation tactics of I'll do this, or we'll all do this, or we'll all do this, and it doesn't actually get implemented. So you can't blame that on anything yet until it becomes official. So it's just that.
Well, those tariff numbers have changed so many goddamn times. I don't even know what the hell's going on anymore. So, because
It's all negotiation.
there was one where it was like 102 for China, and then literally the next day or like a few hours later, it was like, hey, they're negotiating for like 160. And I was like, what the hell's going on? So, I don't know. It is what it is with the tariffs stuff. So.
Yeah. And
Seeing what
tariffs are
they
not
do.
a new thing. Tariffs have been a pain in the ass to the average consumer for longer than I've been alive. The Toyota Hilux cannot be sold here in the States because of a tariff over chickens from the 60s. Again, not making that up.
Just to speak about some of the prices you read out, yeah, it bugs me how expensive, let's call them normal launch controllers are still. Like, okay, I get that my DualSense has got like haptic feedback and fancy parts with like adapted triggers and whatever. They're still just expensive. And then I've noticed controllers don't really themselves go down in price. What I do find interesting on the Microsoft side here, though, is while we're having the discussion on giving your competitor your games. So you're giving them, well, most recently Indiana Jones, which was like a couple of weeks ago, which is technically a Lucasfilm thing, but whatever. And then you're just giving them Forza as well. Now you're giving them Halo, sorry, Gears. Then you might give them Halo, and then you make your box more expensive. So cool. Yeah, don't understand some of these decisions that some of these people make. So that's what I have to say
Yeah,
about that.
and it's not like they're selling so well that they can justify that price. No, they're selling like crap.
So.
I mean, like I said, they're third by a mile in terms of, total console sales. I think technically Sony's in the lead right now, but once the Switch 2 launches, it'll take a while, but it eventually will surpass the PlayStation 5. It won't be overnight. It'll be like, 3, 4 years down the road.
Are they counting? I'm assuming they're counting Pro separately to PS5, right? Because they are different consoles.
I don't know.
Because if you then say, hey, the sale of PlayStation, then that encompasses PS1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 5 Pro, rather than just, yeah, they're separate consoles. So, because they're separate items for you to buy. But yeah, don't have much to say about that past that. We'll see what happens with these increased prices or if they pull back on these things. So, all right, what else did you want to talk about?
Well, I have a lot of different things to talk about for Expedition 33. I did talk about it earlier, but here's the basic breakdown. It did unbelievably well at launch. We're barely a week into it, and it went 145,000 concurrent on Steam. The publishers, Sandfall Interactive, announced that it sold over 1 million copies within the first 3 days, which is unbelievably impressive, especially because it's something that I've been saying for a while. Is like we had a listener write in asking about games, and I said this was an amazing time for AA games. And Sandfall is very much a AA game, a studio. They have less than 40 people.
Yeah, I had that. Yeah.
And they absolutely crushed it. There was actually a side-by-side comparison between Expedition 33 and Assassin's Creed Shadows.
Oh boy. Oh,
Expedition
why
33.
is it that I find it very interesting, and also it makes sense. Whenever a new game comes out that's similar to a game that Ubisoft's made, I haven't found that specific one yet, but I usually find like what was it? What was the video I found the other day? There was takedowns in Star Wars Outlaws compared to, I can't remember what the other game was, but this it always just ends up that way of like, oh yeah, this new game came out and it's doing something better than the Ubisoft game. Let's make a video compare it, which is a fair thing to do, a video comparing the two of them, and just how far behind they are with certain stuff. Anyway, carry on.
Well, the reason why it is because the game lead is actually an ex-Ubisoft employee, which I'll talk about later. But yeah, in terms of budget, it was a tenth of Assassin's Creed. And the reason, outside of the fact that it's, a French developer, French studio, ex-Ubisoft employees, Assassin's Creed was also the last kind of big AAA game to have come out recently. But it actually has, in terms of like, gross revenue, more volume sales than Assassin's Creed. And it was at a lower price too. It's only a $50 game versus the 80 to a $190 billion game that Assassin's Creed was.
I think you muted yourself by accident.
Yeah, coughing.
Oh, okay.
But then they interviewed Guillaume, who is the game director, about it, and he said that back in 2020 he was still working at Ubisoft and he got incredibly bored working there. So Expedition 33 was something that he was inspired by from one of his favorite games growing up, which was Final Fantasy, before they went to a battle combat system and it was more turn-based. And he talks about his inspiration by the 19th century French artists, which I mentioned early in the podcast. A lot of his the people that worked with him also are ex-Ubisoft. He got some big names, obviously, to do the voices, like I talked about with Charlie Cox and Andy Serkis. And the boredom thing, an interesting comment came from Jeff Grubbs, aka Grums, on social media, who I've mentioned before. He is the former lead that got World of Warcraft live. So he said this: working in AAA is a mind-numbing process and not how like it used to be. Nobody on these large 200 to 500 person teams feels any sense of ownership of the game they're working on. They don't even know what they are working on half the time. They sit and work in their very tiny technical or art niche and do very well at it, but ask them about any other aspect of the game, and they probably don't know since it's not their department. It has become utterly soulless, and kudos to Guillaume for getting out there and pursuing his dream with a very small team, which is obviously a big deal. Starting your own thing, betting on yourself to do that, and then succeeding on this level is something that we rarely get to celebrate recently. I mean, they used to be more of a thing, but now it's not as common as it used to be. But it's, you know, he had something he wanted to do. He wasn't happy where he was, so he changed it, and now he's seeing the reaction from it. And I've played the game. This is, I mean, there's issues that I personally have with the game, but they're strictly a me issue, not a game issue. It's like the combat, especially for the boss fights, is way too counter-reaction heavy, I guess would be the... Because all the games that are like that, you know, you have the dodge, and you have the block, and you have the parry. And usually, it's not an instant death if you're not great at it. It makes the combat harder, but it's not really a death sentence. In this game, if you're in like a boss battle, you gotta be on point with it.
Yeah,
you gotta quote get good. and it's one of those things that I'm kind of getting better at it, but it's also massively frustrating. Because some of them are very specific. Like there's attacks to where you can either for countering, you can either parry, dodge, or jump. And there's several attacks where only one of those will work.
Mm. Yeah.
Like if somebody throws a projectile at you, you can't parry somebody throwing a rock at you. This isn't that knife scene from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And obviously if somebody's swinging a weapon at you, you can parry or dodge. But it's one of those things that you gotta really be on it to have any chance at some of these upper boss battles. And I've been getting my face stomped in, but I never blame the game because I know it's my lack of skills that's causing that. I do think it punishes you a little too heavily on it. It's like you can get all your characters killed in like four turns if you're not good at it and the boss fight requires you to be good at it.
Yeah.
And there's some mechanics that they don't explain very well. I've had to go to YouTube a lot for tutorials and for explaining this concept and that concept. And they're fairly straightforward once somebody tells you about them. But there's several that they never told you about it, so.
Yeah. That can feel weirdly rewarding sometimes, though. Like, when you just can't quite figure something out and then you look on YouTube and someone mentions, like, one tiny little thing in a video, and it's like, oh, right, and then it all just kind of clicks together, and it's really nice sometimes, which can be great. But yeah, no, like I said, I'm looking forward to playing it. Just got to get through the other games for me to play first. But yeah, like I said, when great first impression when we first saw it. I quite liked what I saw then. And see how I feel about it when I play it. So.
Yeah, and it's also a great example of what happens when you care about the story above all else. And you're not trying to insert real-world bullshit into everything.
Mm. I did see a comment that made me chuckle a little bit, because someone did this like 15-second capture video of like how good the world looks and the graphics and that. And the person was kind of praising, like, hey, I can't believe this game looks this good. It comes from, like, 30 people or whatever it was, which is a nice thing to say, right? And then someone else said, like, oh, if you split Naughty Dog's teams into groups of six, I think they said, that Naughty Dog could have made, like, six games in the last couple of years. I'm like, what are you talking about? like every studio would have their own different process, but like if you have just because one development team can make something really good with 30 devs, that doesn't mean like, oh yeah, if you go to that studio and let's say you quadruple the amount of devs they have, that they can make quadruple the amount of games. That doesn't always work that way. So
no, it does not.
Yeah, because some games take more, like more detail, more development, more coding, and whatever. So it's not like you can, okay, say you take Uncharted 4 and you go, right, if you take a dev team of 30 people, we make Uncharted 4, and then if you do that multiple times, you could have multiple Uncharted 4s. It just, I mean, I don't know what the development team size was for Uncharted 4. That's usually something I don't really look at. But it was probably more than 30 people, but there's a reason that that's like that. So, yeah. But see, that's what I mean. Like, there's one person I come across who's like, hey, really impressed by what 30 people can do. That's just a nice thing to say about a game. And then for some reason, someone else has got the need to go, like, hey, I'm going to use this as a random opportunity to pick on Naughty Dog. And like, hey, if Naughty Dog did this and did this with this many numbers, they could make more games. Like, just if that second person then thinks, oh yeah, I'm really impressed by what this dev team did with 30 people, then just praise them for that. So I'm sure that will be like, I'm sure if a developer from that team is scrolling through social media and they come across that might make their day. That's just something really nice to say. So and it'll make them feel good about something they probably worked quite hard on, which is just nice. Anyway, cool. What else did you want to talk about today?
That's all I got.
All right, let's move on to the final part, which is feedback. Of course, we already read out Abed's comments and questions about GTA 6. Of course, if you would like to write into the show, I should tell you how you can do that. Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalk, Care Entertainment Talk. We're pretty much on most of the social media, so you can't really miss us per se. So write in to those, and then there's information in your show notes as well. Beth writes in and says, what do you think of hero shooters? So I referenced this question earlier. I'm not sure about Marathon, because that's one that we talked about from Bungie a couple of weeks ago. I still never got around to watching that video, by the way. I've just had other things to do. So I'm not sure about Marathon, but I'm enjoying Marvel Rivals. That's another game for me to kind of get back into. I did try it out for a little bit, and it seemed pretty good. The only, and this wasn't a problem, the only thing I came across was there's so many heroes on this game, because obviously there's a lot of Marvel characters, both heroes and villains. I don't know who to try out. Because, like, okay, Spider-Man's my favourite Marvel character, so I clicked on him, and then I just kept being too tempted. I suppose it's like that kid in a candy shop sort of thing. There were so many things for me to choose between. I was like, I call it next one, next one, next one. So I never, like, settled on anyone or sort of got into it, but I need to check that out again. Hero shooters can be a good idea. That again has gone down the same kind of route a little bit as like battle royales, is everyone looked at them and thought, oh, we'll do that as well, which I think specific to hero shooters, there's very few IP that can actually do that properly. Like, I remember when the rumor came out, and I think the game got cancelled. If you remember, after Battlefield 2042 fell a bit flat on its face, and Ubisoft, sorry, not Ubisoft, EA, just been bashing Ubisoft too much, EA came out and said, like, oh, we've got this idea of the next Battlefield game to be a hero shooter. And I was like, what? What do you mean a hero shooter? And I think I said at the time, like, I don't really know Battlefield's characters that well, but the whole idea, at least in my mind, is, okay, if you have something like an Overwatch or a Marvel game or a DC game, is each character has their own different things they can do, therefore the different button prompts and actions to then fit the way that you want to play the game. Whereas if you've got, like, because the only way you can really do that with a military shooter is if you've got, like, a medic, a sniper, a bomb person, and then, like, a soldier or something. But that's still not unique, really, because then you don't really end up with sort of 25 different characters. So yeah, I mean, as far as that is stretched with, let's say, COD, is where you have your operators, and those are just the, that's what you look like. You look like the operator that you play as, but it doesn't affect sort of what guns you can have. So for example, I have Pharah because she's my favorite Call of Duty character, and when I like click on certain stuff or call certain things out, my character will speak in her voice because it's her. But it's not sort of, oh, Pharah's got like stronger grenades or weaker health, or you know, the pros and cons sort of stuff. So I think That's about as far as Battlefield probably could have gotten. But then, because Call of Duty's got some characters that people really care about. I mean, some of them die in the campaigns and people care about them. I don't really know that Battlefield's got that same sort of thing. So you really have to do it. You really have to be like a Star Wars or a DC or a Marvel or something like that, where you'd need lots and lots and lots of characters, like an Overwatch as well. Not sure about Marathon enjoying Marvel Rivals. So what do you think of hero shooters?
Well, I think that Marathon is supposed to be an extraction shooter, not a hero shooter. And they've had a lot of problems getting any kind of traction in terms of playability and people getting hyped up for it. They're already calling it Concord 2.0. Which I think is
That's
an unfair.
like the new sci-fi joke, isn't it? If you're a sci-fi game and you look poor, you're the next Concord.
And it's one of those things that it's a genre of games I don't play. I did try Marvel, Rivals when it came out because it is free to play. And I'm like, okay, this is basically Overwatch, but you're right about too many characters. If they had started with 20 and then did more after that and after that and after that, I personally would have probably gone more into it. I think there's something like 39 or 40 characters, and they all fill three different roles. So you pick your character, find out what role they play, and then go from there and get used to playing that role in terms of on the squad. But that game style has just never really clicked with me.
But there you go. I just to talk about Marathon for a second, because it got mentioned here. Rewinding back to something I talked about, not the last podcast, the one before that, I think it was, where I talked about the whole Last of Us, Bungie, and how Bungie got involved with factions and essentially said, like, hey, if you want to do this, you're going to have to drop your sort of single player narrative games. And they said it was like good, or they said the factions was looking good, or whatever. Because Bungie's fallen on its face a little bit with Destiny. If we get to a situation where, let's say, Marathon comes out and it doesn't light the world on fire, and that will I because for Naughty Dog to reach out to Bungie and ask for a second opinion, which is a fair thing to do, because initially Halo's got a great history. Destiny did very, very well in its like first years or whatever, and Destiny 2 as well. If that studio is then not doing well with its games and they give a second opinion to a studio who have tried multiplayer games before, because we had Last of Us Factions and you had Uncharted 4 had, I think it was just 4, had multiplayer. I think it was 3 as well. But that those were like smaller, little multiplayer game modes and not sort of this big live service stuff. If they've gone to Naughty Dog, or Naughty Dog sort of gone to them, sorry, and asked for a second opinion and said, like, this won't work, and then you come out with Marathon. And it falls on it, or, and it doesn't want, light the world on fire. It doesn't have to fall on its face, just doesn't light the world on fire. And it ends up being sort of, okay, you should have taken the reins of what Naughty Dog has set up with factions, and you should have done that instead. That's going to turn out to be a pretty expensive mistake, I think. Because the way I think that should have been done is, because again, I don't really care about Marathon per se. You don't do Marathon. You take factions from Naughty Dog. Naughty Dog still oversees and keeps an eye on factions, but they still focus on what they're doing. And then Bungie kind of leads the way with factions. I think that would have been the better thing to do. But then we'll have to wait for Marathon to come out and see what that's actually like. As we move on to our last one here, Sam says, what genres of games do you both never quite get into? For me, building games and sports games don't do much for me. I've tried a few building games before, and they've been good. I've liked the idea of them. They just sometimes, like when you get into the longer term stuff, it just like there's not really an end goal per se, and it just asks too much sometimes. It almost ends up being like a second job in a sort of way, which I know some people like, but that's just not really what I'm looking for from that. Genres of games I can never get into. I guess racing games is one for me. Like, I've tried the Forza games, I've tried Gran Turismo, and from what I've tried from those games have been very good. But I almost want games that have racing and another thing. So, like, what GTA does, for example, is like, okay, you're going to use your car and you might do some little race mini games, but then you also have an on foot third person game to also play. So that's kind of where I prefer my driving to be in video games, when it sort of is a part of something that does other things as well. So yeah, building games I'm the same with, but racing games for me, I just could never kind of, because things like, Formula One racing or whatever, I never really kind of cared about that. I'm sure there's probably, strategies and tactics that I'm not aware of because I'm not in that space. Sports games for you though, Sam. I mean, if you don't really follow sports or you don't like sports, I can kind of understand that. Because it's like when someone tries to, because my dad does watch like Formula One and stuff, and when my dad talks to me about things like, let's say, Formula One and rugby, and I can get a grasp on what he's talking about, but I don't really get it, or don't really sort of, it's just not for me. That is probably what it's like, and I don't realize this when this is happening, but that's probably what it's like when I'm talking to somebody who doesn't really get football, when I'm talking to them about football. But I just think when you look at, unless it's something like tennis or golf or something that's a bit more simple, football, just the British football, if you want to call it soccer, you can call it that or whatever. I just don't think it's difficult to understand. Because there's nothing to do with, like, when you're in rugby and you go for a try or you go for the long kick or whatever that's called. Football is just, okay, whoever's got the most goals at the end of the game wins. And then that accumulates you to get points, and you want to do that as many times as you can before the end of the season, so you end up as high in the league table as you can. And then obviously win cup games to get through cup rounds. The only part where things get a little bit complicated is where it's like, okay, the first and the second leg of a tie. But then it's just, okay, who's got the most goals by the end of the second game? So, yeah. But then when I'm talking to people about football, it's like, okay, the one thing they never, the common thing that always comes up that people don't understand is like the offside rule. That's always the number one thing. Like, they get it that, okay, if the ball goes over the line where the net is, then that's a goal and that's a point. Okay, fair enough. So yeah. What about for you, Robert? What game genres could you never quite get into?
I've never been able to get into the Souls game. That's a genre that I'll happily watch people play it, but I have no interest in doing it whatsoever. I'm a little bit like that with first-person shooters. I can play them, but I'm always honest in that I'm not very good at them. So it's one of those things that, it's a me thing, so.
The thing is with that though, when you get to the Twitch, let's call it the Twitchy if you want to call it that, online competitive stuff. I know this obviously from COD experience. Sometimes if you do what you want to do a split second later than what somebody else has done something, you're going to die before you've tried to do the thing that you're going to do, because you're already too late in, like, movement, animations, who shoots first, whatever. So it can be really, really difficult sometimes. So yeah, I get what you mean, and even as someone who plays games in that space, I totally get what you mean. Sometimes it's just like, I still see these gameplay videos of people playing COD, and they're sliding and jumping and turning and sliding and jumping and shooting, and it's like, how are you even pressing that many buttons at the same time? And how can you see what you're doing? I don't know. But fair, if you can play COD like that, then fair play to you, because it ain't easy to do that. So, yeah, totally get what you mean. What other short genres?
Really not that many. I'll try, but it's more if the game itself and not the genre itself clicked with me or not. Because I did play Overwatch for a while, but that was more because I had a friend that played with it. So it
Yeah, I
was a lot
remember. Yeah.
easier to deal with the game when you have a friend, you know,
Yeah.
giving you tips and trips and whatnot. And they kind of quit gaming, so I have nothing really to connect myself with that genre now, so.
Yeah, that's fair enough. On the Souls thing, though, because obviously Lies of P, which is a game that I love, falls very much into that category. I just found that game to be so much more approachable, especially in the early stages, with like the parry system, and I don't know, it just felt better to play. Plus, you've got a lot more options with your weapon and the customization there, which is really, really good. And also, just like I've tried Dark Souls, I've tried Elden Ring for a bit, I tried Bloodborne. Like, obviously, there's a very, 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 very passionate Bloodborne fan base out there, and I'm obviously not going to take anything away from them. I've tried Bloodborne probably 4 or 5 times. I just never ever got the sort of this is one of the greatest games ever sort of thing, or this is like PlayStation's best ever game. I thought it was a great game that worked really well and all that, but nothing about it really grabbed me and made me say like, yeah, I want to try and get really good at it, get into the rhythm and get rewarded for that. Whereas with Lies of P's, particularly it's like its themes, characters, story, the empathy stuff in there, the human bits and pieces of that game really, really pulled me in, and I just ended up loving it. So I also just found and Demon's Souls, which is another one that I tried, that I got into that a lot more than the Dark Souls and the Bloodborne stuff. But because Demon's Souls, and it might be because I played the PS5 version, which is obviously the best version of the game. Because as a video game, it played very, very, very well, and I was very impressed by what it was doing. I got like somewhere in that, but then ended up kind of just falling away from it. But yeah, Lies of P's like story and the cutscenes and just the way it told its story, I thought was just so much better and just so much more interesting. So yeah. Plus you got the lie truth mechanic. That's really interesting to kind of play around, well, not to play around with, but to sort of get the angle on and everything. So thought that was great. You right there?
Yeah, I'm just moving around in my chair.
Okay. Cool. All right, well, that's everything we've got for you for this week of gaming talk. And depending on what news we get between now and Tuesday next week, we'll see what we've got for the next one. Because anything can happen, I suppose. Anyway, in the meantime, you can find all of our content on entertainmenttalk.org, for TV, games, films, Monday Night Podcast. There'll be another Last of Us podcast today, which will be for my spoiler predictions episode, so look out for that. And then nothing on Tuesday, I don't think. And then spoiler review for Last of Us on Wednesday for the newest episode, and then the United cast on Tuesday. Very, very big game, the second leg of our semi-final. Will we bottle a 3-0 lead? It's possible, but we could also lose that game 2-0 and be fine and be in the final. So we'll see what happens on Thursday. And then still got some films to see with Thunderbolts and Sinners. I've still not gotten out to see those yet. So look out for all those. Yeah, those will be coming soon at some point. But yeah, check out our TV, games, films, and Monday Night podcasts over on entertainmenttalk.org and podcast platforms of the same name. If you want to support what we do here, you can of course listen to more stuff. You can find it on the places I've just mentioned. Word of mouth, social media, and telling other people is always very helpful. If someone mentions something we've podcasted on, please tell someone about those podcasts. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers for the free podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, that's over with David, who's my Last of Us co-host as well. He runs geektown.co.uk and Geektown Radio. Look out for a new one of those tomorrow, because it'll be Tuesday tomorrow, so look out for one of those. What else is there? YouTube, for all the random bits and pieces of gameplay stuff. I've put some new Uncharted things up as well. So look out for those. But thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.